I'd like to introduce the panel of speakers this morning. I'm Joe Tisch, for those of you who don't know me. And this is Hriman on your left. Hriman and Padma, his wife, are the leaders of the community in Seattle. And Asha, along with David, lead the community in Palo Alto. This is Ananta. Until recently, he and his wife led the community in Sacramento, but now they are in charge. They've recently moved back to the village here, and they're in charge of working with the youth ashram, youth program here, which is absolutely wonderful. And this is Devi, my wife on the end, and we live here at the village. So this morning we're going to talk about the mission of communities that the masters had and a little bit about the meaning behind communities. It's a very, very interesting and important topic. I want to talk first, though, to fill you in, because many of you don't know the history, why we consider today the 40th anniversary. Davey mentioned it briefly, but we had the property that we now call the meditation retreat for a couple of years before we had this property. And we were developing some buildings, and in fact, there was quite a residential population there in the spring of 1969. But it soon became apparent that that was not the place to start a community. And so Swamiji looked around for land and found this land. I won't go into the whole story because it's long, fun, and a little bit complicated. You can read about it in one of the books that we have. But he found this land, and escrow closed, and we took possession on July 4th, 1969. That gives us a firm starting date for the communities movement in America. So this is the 40th birthday party that we're having now. And as Davey intimated, we will now have an annual event talking about communities and the importance of them and celebrating together. I want to talk a little bit about the mission that brought the masters here and the mission that resulted in the creation of communities. It isn't by happenstance. Great masters like this do not kind of casually come into the world. All great masters come in with a mission, but some of those missions are more important in a worldly sense, not in a divine sense, but in a worldly sense, they can be more important. And the mission of these masters in particular for the world is very, very central. I'll explain a little bit. Many great saints come into this world, and all of them, their primary mission is to turn the hearts and minds of people toward God. That's why they incarnate, and that's why they come and gather disciples around them, or that they have a message for the world. But this particular line of masters has incarnated again and again and again at particular changing points in the direction of the world and its history and humanity. For instance, Master said that he was Arjuna and Babaji was Krishna at the time of Kurukshetra. Now, Kurukshetra, in the cycle of the yugas, which I again won't go into, but in the cycle of the yugas, Kurukshetra and that great battle was about the same time in the descending cycle of the cycles as we are in the ascending cycle of the yugas. So they came at the end of Dwapara descending, the beginning of Kali Yuga descending. And now they've come again at the end of Kali Yuga ascending and Dwapara Yuga ascending. So at those two pivotal points. And there's a third incarnation that Master had that's very, very important also. And he said that he also came as William the Conqueror. And Swamiji was, at that time, his youngest son, Henry. Henry was the one who carried on the mission that Yogananda, his guru, or William in that life, incarnated for. Now, why would they come at these pivotal times? Because at these pivotal times, humanity needs a course correction. Well, let's face it, we always need a course correction. But at these pivotal times, we need a major course correction, one that will get us on the right direction for the succeeding yuga, in this case, for the next couple of thousand years. And so they came at this time in order to give us that primary teaching, not just us, the ones who sit here, but mankind as a whole, the primary teachings that we need to align ourselves to. And why do we need to align ourselves to? Just because they're authority figures or they're sent by God? Kind of, we were laughing with Swamiji yesterday about Michelangelo's view of mankind on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, where he's shaking his finger and all the damned, and he really paints the damned well. All the damned are being thrust into hell. And that's a very old-fashioned, old Kali Yuga idea of mankind. But why do the masters come? They don't come to shake their finger and to admonish us. They come only for our benefit. They are a manifestation of love and caring and compassion. And they come in order to express to us in a loving way what we can do to be happy. Master said that everyone in the world is motivated by the same single primary motivation, the desire to be happy and the desire not to be in pain. And so they come and let us know how we can be happy and how we can avoid pain. In this case, as I was saying, there are certain eras, certain time periods in history, and in each of those time periods, a particular strategy is better in order to be happy. And in this age, this is the age of energy. And so, as I say, the old Kali Yuga concept of religion, where you have a god that's condemning you, why would they have that in Kali Yuga? Because at that time, mankind's consciousness is at the very lowest, and they need rules and someone saying, if you don't follow these rules, you're going to get punished. Otherwise, they don't follow the rules at all. At the time Master incarnated as William the Conqueror, he set in motion at that time a centralization of consciousness. The world was so split the conquering of England was the year was 1066, so roughly 1,000 years ago. The consciousness of the nations of the world, they weren't even nations. The consciousness of the world was very fractured. And at that time, it was just a whole grouping of warring barons and lords and fighting constantly. In fact, one of the reasons the Crusades started very shortly after the invasion, they started about 20 years after William conquered England. The reason that Pope Urban started those was in part to unite the Christian world into a single goal. Basically, if you're going to fight, why fight each other? Let's unite together and fight a common enemy. Unfortunately, it's a very stupid way of thinking. Nonetheless, it had its purpose in those times, and that's what I'm trying to make the point, is that the masters have to act according to the times that they're in. If we are unfortunate enough to have to incarnate in Treta Yuga and look back at these times, we will think they're unbelievably crude, just as looking back at 1,000 years ago, we think, well, how crude. They couldn't even get along with each other. They were fractured. They were fighting all the time. Sounds like the movies to me. So our consciousness needs direction, and they come at that time. Master came as William the Conqueror. Swami came as his son Henry in order to plant the seeds that would lead to a stepping stone in our age. So a unified government, the beginnings of English as a language, which will become the world language, is already becoming the world language. So they were planting the seeds that allows for a greater unity. Okay, so in this lifetime, Master came, and this line of masters came again, and with a very particular mission. And that mission, in very central terminology, means community. But I'll come to that. They also had some other things that they were doing. As I said, all saints come in order to turn men's hearts and minds toward God. And so Master and this line of gurus did, of course, do that. But they also came saying that if you want to turn your mind and your heart toward God, there are ways that are more effective and ways that are less effective. And in this age, the way that's effective is self-realization. Always, during all ages, the ultimate goal is self-realization. It is the dissolving of the ego, the sense of separateness, the sense of being separate from God. That is always, as Master called it, the eternal quest. And the eternal quest doesn't matter ages, but the strategy by which we try to achieve that changes in the ages. So they say, first of all, the primary purpose of your incarnation is to turn your heart and your mind toward God and to dissolve the ego. But they say, in the past, perhaps rules, outward ceremonies, prayers were the most effective way to do that. But that's not true in this age. In this age, which is an age of energy, we must work with the energies of the body. And so they gave us the techniques that work with energy. Our primary techniques work with prana, pranayama. Literally means the control of prana or energy or life force. And so our techniques are those that allow us to control, to point, and to uplift the energies that we have. So they gave us Kriya Yoga, the Om technique, Hong Saw, and Master created the energization techniques, all to point our energy. But more than that, they gave us inner communion as the goal. So you can, for instance, just pray prayers out loud and pray and pray. I was very amused. I don't know whether it was last year or the year before, but there's a beautiful chant, which is, desire my great enemy. It's giving me lots of trouble. And then goes on to say, essentially, pranayama is the way to conquer that great enemy, desire. Well, we had a little skit, and Devaki was playing this essentially worldly woman in it, and she was singing that chant, but in such a way, desire my great enemy is giving, like a little, you know, she was mouthing the words, but it was obviously no real meaning to it, and she did that so well. So we can pray out loud, we can say the words, but without the meaning, we don't get the essence of it. When, for instance, there's long been a teaching that if you want to, as Krishna says in the Gita, he who is able to keep his mind fixed on me speedily comes to me. And so if we're trying to keep our mind fixed on him, how do we do that? One way is to pray, to sing songs to Krishna, to think of Krishna. But there's another way, and deeper and more appropriate to our age. Krishna represents the spiritual eye. And the real worship of Krishna at the spiritual eye is the offering of the life force into that point, which is the essence of Kriya Yoga, the essence of our path. Master said, if you want to make very, very rapid progress, the most rapid progress is to keep your mind constantly fixed at the spiritual eye. Another way of saying, Krishna saying, keep your mind constantly fixed on me. Keep your energy, keep your life force constantly flowing toward the Christ consciousness or Krishna consciousness. So see, in this age, the old forms are now turned and moved into the essence, more the essence and the energy of those forms. So that's one thing. They came to teach us the most efficient way to worship them, actually to follow them. We had some pilgrims from India visit us, and we had a satsang last week or the week before. One of them said a very interesting thing. I found it very enlightening. She said, in India, it's very, very common to worship the guru. Most Indians' families have a little puja room or something, and they worship the guru. She said, but here at Ananda, you don't just worship the guru, you follow the guru. And that little turn makes all the difference, doesn't it? And so we're trying to follow the teachings of the great masters. So they've given us the spiritual teachings. But they've given us a second thing that is also just as important, which is the bridge to the reason that we have Ananda. They have said that in this age, it is not the best strategy to simply turn your back on the world and isolate yourself. There are a few souls maybe that that's right for, but for the mass of mankind, that's not right. On the other hand, it's also not right to worship God in your puja room or a little bit on Sunday morning and forget about it the rest of the time and go about trying to greedily overcome your enemies by business enemies by whatever means spring to mind. All of life, they say, should be integrated in this age. Your families, home, job, church, all integrated into your spiritual search. And that's very important because it wasn't necessarily true 1,000 years ago. Remember when Lahiri Mahashaya came to Babaji? Babaji gave him an experience. He was in ecstasy and samadhi for 7 days or 9 days, I've forgotten which. And after that, he came out of that great experience. He said, Babaji, please let me remain with you here in the Himalayas. And Babaji said, there was a reason that you were not called here until you were a grown man and you had modest family and worldly responsibilities. Go back to your family, go back to your job. He went back, he was an accountant for the British. I mean, how more mundane in a certain sense can you get than that? That's one of the avatars. So that is very, very much symbolic of the fact that in this age, we must integrate the daily activities of our life, everything, with our spiritual search. There is no longer reason to separate those two. And so our businesses, our work, our family life, our education, our entertainment, everything should be an aid to our desire, our eternal quest, which is the dissolving of the ego. Everything should lead toward the dissolving of the ego. And so the integration of the philosophy that they brought, the spiritual path that they brought, along with daily life, those are the first two steps. But then, how do we get that out into the world? Out of 1,000, one follows me, it says in the Gita. Well, that's not very many, 1 in 1,000. If you're 1 in 1,000 kind of bumping around with 999 people who don't share your ideals, don't share even the thought that your ideals might be a proper ideal, even if they don't share them themselves, then it's very hard to get the momentum. So Master said, gather together in spiritual communities, in world brotherhood colonies, as he gave the term, of like-minded people so that we can reinforce each other in the spiritual search. Everybody who lives here or lives as a resident in one of our many communities knows the value of living with other devotees, of having that constant reinforcement and constant inspiration. There isn't a person in this community who doesn't inspire me in some way. It's almost as if everyone specializes on the behalf of all the rest of us in some little area and offers that as an inspiration. And that grouping together, constantly mixing and uplifting, makes the power so much stronger. We were recounting to Swamiji yesterday or the day before an incident when we started, Devi and I started the ashram in San Francisco. There was a young man who came to the ashram at that point, and he said, I've always felt that I had so much to give to the world, but nobody wanted it until I came here. And here in these communities, we want what each other has. We want the highest for each other. It's almost like a heaven on earth, where there's almost no cross current. The master called them the thwarting cross currents of ego. We can't say that the people here live without ego. That would be untrue. But the veils of ego are thin and flapping in the breeze of Master's will. And so with that, there's a very, very much of an uplifted consciousness. Now that's important not only for those of us who live here and who benefit by it. But if these masters, as I've said, came into the world to set a new direction for mankind, mankind as a whole is not ready to pick up on it just in terms of philosophy. They need examples, and they need to see, in this scientific age, they need to see an experiment that says this works. We are the living laboratory of Master's teachings so that we can demonstrate to the world that it works, and so that people everywhere have the confidence to make the leap into a lifestyle such as this. And Master said that this is the lifestyle for Dwapara Yuga. He said that these communities will spread like wildfire. Well, they're sparks here and there, and we're pushing on those bellows as hard as we can to get the conflagration going. But it is destined, it's God's will, and we are enormously blessed to have the opportunity to live in such a community at such an early, early stage of this great work, this great mission of the Masters.